tuned in to the Community Cats Podcast. Ready? Let's go.
Welcome to the Community Cats Podcast. Stacy LeBaron is the guest today on her own podcast. Stacy has been involved working with Community Cats for over 20 years with the Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society. I'm Mike Phillips of UrbanCatLeague.org, and this is our chance to hear how Stacy is turning her passion for cats into action. Stacy, are you ready?
I'm ready, Mike.
Okay. Now, for regular listeners of the podcast, they know that see it, fix it is the podcast motto. So, Stacy, in 2025, what's the podcast going to be focused on? Can you give us an update?
Yeah, sure. So in 2024, see it, fix it, solve it. We were all about trying to create solutions. And in 2025, it's going to be about strategy. We're going to be focusing on strategy, how to work more efficiently and effectively, how to work the numbers to be able to determine how many cats really need assistance in the community to be able to achieve that magical maintenance level that we've all been striving for. I'm almost at 30 years now in animal welfare, and we all want to know, when are we going to be there? When are we there? When are we at that perfect point where we're going to be balanced? Cats are going to need assistance. Families are going to need assistance. But what is that balanced level that we need to get to in order to be able to breathe, to feel calm, to feel like we're able to reach out to all those cats and their families in the community to be able to get the assistance they need, whatever that might be, whether it's pet food, whether it's spay neuter, whether it's trap neuter return. You know, there's so many different components to this puzzle. There's actually an organization calls it the jigsaw puzzle for being able to treat cats in your community. And that's where I'm moving strategically. Let's get to that humane model for success for our cats and the families that care for cats in our cities and towns.
Yeah. And I've seen changes from our side. Kristen Petrie's been doing a lot of stuff. I couldn't imagine how you were doing everything you were doing. It's so fun to see Kristen take over. And I know you're on the board of directors of a bunch of slew of different groups. We've seen you with National Kitten Coalition, the Neighborhood Cats training workshops. And you know, tell us about the United Spay Alliance and the community clinic in Georgia.
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, I'd asked Mike earlier before we hit the recording button, I want a chance to share some of the things that I'm doing outside of the podcast. Love the podcast, but I'm also involved with about six other organizations. One being United Spay Alliance, which has become near and dear to my heart for sure. I am the interim executive director there. And we launched a podcast this year called United We Spay. We launched it in 2024, and I hope you'll tune into it, become a subscriber of that. You cannot have trap, neuter, return without that N. That N is so critically important. And so that's where the United Spay Alliance falls. They are about making sure that we get access to the spay, neuter appointments that we need for the cats that we're trapping in the community. And there's so many incredible tips and tricks. There's different ways to be able to create spay, neuter capacity that are provided on the United Spay Alliance website, as well as these incredible stories of folks all around the world who are doing amazing things for efficiency, for spay, neuter, for cats, as well as for dogs. But we do focus pretty much on cats at the United Spay Alliance with Feline Fix by Five, getting pediatric spay, neuter out there. The Community Cats Grants Program, that moved over to United Spay Alliance this year. So now it's being managed over in that nonprofit, which has helped to provide benefits. The cohort this year, the first cohort that the United Spay Alliance is working with, is about 50 organizations are part of that cohort. So it's very busy times over at the United Spay Alliance. It's all about getting that N taken care of there and being able to advocate for really strong trap neuter return. We want to make sure the spay neuter is there. We want to make sure that the resources are there to support the colonies. Injured cats, it's just, even though United Spay Alliance is just about spay neuter, it's not. I mean, we want a humane community for cats that way. So I'm proud to be part of it. We have a vet shortage task force, and we do wet labs within veterinary practices, private practice vets, as well as nonprofit vets. We do wet lab training and high quality, high volume spay neuter techniques.
for people that wouldn't know, what's a wet lab?
So a wet lab, it's a training opportunity. So high quality, high volume spay neuter techniques are tips and tricks, different ways to use the surgical tools to be able to do a spay more quickly, more effectively than maybe what you were taught in veterinary schools.
A lot of us don't imagine that the vet, I actually go back and forth from New York City to a more rural area in New Jersey.
Yeah.
And I encounter vets who are like, you know, ready to go. Oh, yeah, I've been doing high volume. And others that, oh, before 6 months, they just don't know how easy it is. And then if you suggest gently, well, you know, there's one of these wet lab things that you might want to go. I think you get a lot out of it, this and that. And they come back. Oh, my God, I had no idea. I mean, there's no blood flow to those organs. It's so easy. You can almost nip it off with your thumbnail. Right. But they didn't know. And they're the veterinarians. They got through school, maybe assisted a few spay-neuter surgeries. If they're lucky, they did three, maybe, before they went in on their own, unassisted, doing spay-neuter. And they just, we think, what are you talking about 6 months? They could be pregnant by then, you know? But this movement is so exciting that they're getting a second chance to go back to vet school and learn how to do spay-neuter, because you and me, that's a spay-neuter over and over. In case anybody couldn't hear it in Stacy's voice, her passion for cats, I'll give you one more proof. As we're doing this interview, there's currently in the third set of a Grand Slam tennis final, the semifinal match, and we're talking about cats and happy to do it.
Yeah.
If you didn't know, Stacy's an avid tennis player herself, and we both love to follow tennis. So we'll have to, we'll get that result later. We're talking about cats.
Well, we'll catch up on that one later.
Down in Georgia with Rich Ducharme, you opened a second clinic, right? Tell us about that.
Sure. I'm going to digress and explain what our wet labs are at the United Spay Alliance. It's a one-day event, and it's open to any veterinarian. We have them in each state across the country. You come in and you have two training veterinarians and 4 to 6 students. They are full-fledged veterinarians, and it's an exposure day. If you're a veterinarian that hasn't been exposed to the high-quality, high-volume spay-neuter techniques, it's the way for a private practice veterinarian, ER veterinarian, a veterinarian that might be only doing wellness vaccines and that type of thing, and they're away from the surgical space. It's a way for them to see what this is like, to give them a flavor of what the high quality, high volume spay neuter is, because I would love it if private practice veterinarians would adapt these techniques in their clinics so that they could do more volume of spay neuter, therefore potentially reducing their prices just a little bit or saving time so there's less burnout in their facility to be able to serve their clients. So many private practice vets right now turn people away just because they don't have capacity for new clients. So if they can save time and also be higher quality, then it's a win-win for everybody. So private practice, as well as the shelter clinics, we're not separate. We're the same. We're in the same game. And that's where the community cat clinic comes into play, because it's a private practice clinic that I've been involved with forming in Woodstock, Georgia. And then there's a second practice in Duluth, Georgia. And it's modeled about handling all cats, the needs of all cats. So it's affordable care. It's incremental care. When I say incremental care, it means it's a conversation between the family with the veterinary technician or a case manager and the veterinarian to determine what's the best course of treatment for this cat. And then there's a conversation about affordability. What can the family afford for the care for this cat too? And if affordability is a challenge, there's a process we go through to try and help them be able to afford the treatment that's needed for the cat. But we're not going to go gold standard with everybody. It doesn't mean we have to do the most intense and expensive tests. If there's a way that we can say, oh, let's treat with an antibiotic and see if this might help, and we'll come right back and evaluate again. And there also is Community Cat Champions, which is a nonprofit organization that's been developed to also backfill. So since the Community Cat Clinic has started about a year and a half ago, they have not had to do economic euthanasia for any cats in the clinic. Wow. That's one of the main things. We did not want to have that happen at all. And we were doing everything in our power to make sure that doesn't happen. 500,000 animals are euthanized across the country annually because people can't afford the treatment.
Right.
And so this is a model we're trying to create so that then the staff doesn't burn out, the families are happy. It's just, it's a win-win for everybody. And it really honestly hasn't been that expensive to the clinic. It's been very successful and folks have found us and we've been able to save families and save lives that way. And in other practices, you know, it's a weekly occurrence where somebody said, I can't afford this, you're going to have to put my kitty down.
And at the same time, you're offering some wonderful services to the feral cat caretakers. Ducharme, I think, outlined in your interview, they have a lock-off room. Can you explain how it is they can bring the cats in and leave them?
Yeah, so we have at both of the community cat clinics, we have a back entrance into the facility that connects to a feral cat holding room with a keypad. And so our very trusted trappers, we develop a relationship with them. They have an account with us. They click on the keypad, they go in, there's a separate room with stacked shelving that is all in place and it's all individually ventilated room, climate controlled. The cats in the traps get set up in that room. They've brought in, they're there, and then the trappers can leave and then they can pick the cat up after it's done with its surgery and return it back to field. So we're actually acting as the holding space.
Yeah, amazing.
And I know, you know, New York City holding space is like gold.
Precious gold. Yeah. No, I only encountered that once. I worked in LA for 4 years and a friend said, hey, you want to go to dinner? And I said, oh, I just trapped a cat. I have to take it home, set it up. And she said, I'll meet you at ABC. ABC was Animal Birth Control, Dr. Mackey's clinic.
Yep.
And he was one of the pioneers of pediatric spay neuter. He's retired and I hope he's still happily alive and enjoying his retirement. But I went, oh, yeah, I'll meet you there. And I had a life and we went out to dinner and for $5 a day, he would hold the cat and they would feed it for 2 days. He did the whole recovery and you could come back and pick it up. And I wanted to see that emulated. And when Rick Ducharme said he was doing it, I like just fell down and kissed the ground because I think that is such an important service to offer people who are out there for hours and hours trapping. Can I please just deliver the cat?
Right, exactly. And it makes perfect sense. And because then when the staff gets in the morning, they already know that they have an agenda going on, right? It's not like, are they going to show up? Are they not going to show up? What's the traffic like and all that stuff? No, they just look in the back and they see what happened.
Yeah. It saves time for them too, because they don't have to stand on the curb unloading traps and bringing them in and everything. It's all there. It's a really terrific thing. I want to switch to something that you may not have an answer to this, but I thought I've heard a few in some of the podcast interviews. Post-COVID, there were some things that got innovated at COVID that were very efficient, timely scheduling, meeting people, doing things. And I'm just wondering if there are any keepers that you came across that we probably will keep even after, you know, social distancing was no longer necessary. Anything come to mind?
I believe from the adoption side of things post-COVID, the appointment-based adoption system is a keeper. I think that if you have an organization where you have very committed volunteer staff or staff, paid staff, having them use an appointment system with, you know, basically approved applicants or questionnaire people or those kinds of things. I know a lot of organizations, it took them a while to open up to the general public because they were like, oh, it's such a relief. We don't have the shoppers, you know, the people who just sort of come in and they walk
come
around.
Come to kick
and
the
they,
tires.
Right. They bring the kids in after school and that kind of thing. And so it was kind of refreshing. The staff could really zone in and focus and say, my objective is finding great homes for these cats and getting them out the door. And so appointment base is great from the adoption program side. And then organizations may have less open hours, but they're more like open house hours rather than like open hours. So then adoption business and open house business are approached in a little bit of a different way. So it's like community outreach versus, no, we're adopting and we're very focused because we want to make sure we're giving the right information to the adopters and that kind of stuff. So technology has grown tremendously out there. Using technology, things like Sylvester AI, the Grimace scale, trying to use tools like on your phone to be able to determine if a community cat is in pain or not, using obviously AI, those kinds of tools to make the technology load easier, the administrative load easier. There's a lot of administrative work that goes on if you're managing a nonprofit, and there are a lot of tools out there now to make, I'm not saying it's going to be easy, but it's easier out there.
I was at the vet and I saw the technician on a Zoom call with a person like myself of a certain age, which, you know, if we hadn't had COVID, we would never have learned to use Zoom.
Right.
We just wouldn't. And this, the tech was on Zoom showing something about the prescription or the bottle or administration with an older person on a Zoom call. And actually, my New Jersey vet, you check in at curbside. You telephone from your car. Okay, you're here. Wonderful. They take the history. They take the reason for the appointment. And then when they actually have a room and they're ready for you, you come in and you go right into the room. So there's not all of this chaos in the waiting room and contagion of little puppies licking each other and everything. And for a feral cat person, my cat isn't sitting on the floor with a trap cover and every dog is coming up and lifting the trap cover. I could bring my feral cat in. It goes immediately into the back. And that's a keeper for me. I really appreciate that check-in from the car.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And also, one thing from the staffing world, if you are in a situation where you have to record a lot of notes, there are so many systems out there now that voice to notes recognition that you don't have to spend millions of hours, you know, at the end of the day, typing in your notes from your handwriting that nobody can ever read. If you're doing voice to notes, I think those are really helpful also.
I want to jump from that to any interesting fundraising things you've come about. I'll share too, just while we'll get your wheels turning to let you try and think about something, but interesting workarounds for fundraising. We had two with Urban Cat League, totally unexpected sources of income. Our council member for Hell's Kitchen has not been really responsive to the feral cat issue. He inherited a kitten-free zone. So he can't really appreciate what it was like 25 years ago when there was cats roaming all over the neighborhood. And we stumbled onto something. One of our volunteers decided she'd kind of weave her way into the council member's office. Well, it turned out she has a great passion for trees. So she got on a committee and she's a very instrumental part of the committee. And she worked with trees and they just now planted their 500th tree in Hell's Kitchen. And she's our go-to girl. She can get us into the council member and influence. And now we're positioned better. We've asked for participatory budgeting in the past. And when we put it in this year, I'm hoping that, you know, because we have found someone. But she didn't do it in a manipulative way. She seriously had a passion. But there's a way to get into an agency that you can't get into. Well, what are they doing? What are they interested in? Oh, they're interested in trees. I love trees. I'll get it on the tree committee. And you become a known commodity. And then they'll take your phone call. They wouldn't, president of Urban Cat League, they wouldn't take my phone call. But they took Joan's phone call. And she's a tireless volunteer. But she's not on the board of directors. But if I need something from the council member, I go through Joan. And then the other thing there, I don't know if people know, there are like 400 feral cats on Rikers Island. And the situation has been floundering for 20 years. And this last year, Joan, our tireless volunteer, was on a New York Community Trust Zoom call. And she said, would you consider money for feral cats? And they said, yes, that affects wildlife. That's this and that. And this, of course. So we configured a grant proposal. They were interested in protecting wildlife through TNR. And they also were very interested in inmate programs. So we said, well, we would love to create an inmate program so that the cats could be cared for in part by the low security inmates, incarcerated people. and we'd like to develop a program. And we'd also like to protect the wild. It's right near LaGuardia Airport, and there's an aviation problem with the birds that are drawn to the cat food on the island right near the airport. And there's all kinds of wildlife on Rikers Island, too. So we said we'd like to create a sanctuary for the cats apart from the wildlife and the birds. They gave us $60,000. But this is a wildlife prison inmate program. But I'm just thinking you can find a way that you never imagined to get money. This is something I think would hopefully in the future that wildlife organizations will finally realize the value of TNR and start supporting, actually, if you really put your money where your mouth is, if you really want a conclusive solution.
Start your 2025 with a PER-focused purpose. Join us for the 8th Annual Online Cat Conference on January 25th and 26th, a two-day virtual event designed to give you the tools and knowledge to make a real difference for cats in your community. Here's what's in store. Inspiring speakers sharing success stories and expert advice, actionable strategies to elevate your advocacy efforts, and the chance to connect with fellow cat lovers and grow together. Whether you're a seasoned cat champion or just starting your journey, this is your opportunity to learn from the best and create lasting change for our feline friends. Don't wait. Register now at communitycatspodcast.com. Some highlights. Vicki Halls of International Cat Care will be talking about the jigsaw puzzle of sustainable and effective cat population management. Rebecca Burley of Pennies for People, Animals, and Wildlife Shelters will lead a compassion fatigue workshop with practical applications. You'll also go globetrotting with Brian Cordes of Neighborhood Cats, consider community kittens with Rosemarie Crawford of the National Kitten Coalition, and get the latest on feline leukemia from FELV expert Margaret Tompkins of the Tompkins Foundation. That's just a few of the speakers who'll be sharing their knowledge at the online cat conference. Again, visit communitycatspodcast.com to learn more and register today. That's communitycatspodcast.com. We can't wait to see you there.
In a recent study, 97% of respondents said that pets are family. Communities can play a vital role in helping to keep families together. Whether it's reuniting lost pets with their owners, donating pet supplies or funds for pet owners in need, or offering short or long-term fostering, people can help keep pets and their people together. We just have to show them how. Did you know there are resources you can use to help bring attention to the programs you offer to help them do just that? From public service announcements, short videos, printable posters, online and social graphics, and much more. Find your resources at www.petsandpeopletogether.org/campaign-resources. #BeAHelper.
Attention, advocates and animal welfare professionals. Elevate your expertise in 2025 with the Community Cats Pass, your comprehensive passport to over $400 worth of expert-led education and events for just $250. With this pass, you'll gain access to all our major virtual events, including the Online Cat Conference, Online Kitten Conference, Online Behavior Day, our Return to Home Certification Workshop, and many more certification programs like Quality Caretaking Tips and Tricks, and our own TNR Certification Workshop. Whether you're a seasoned expert or just starting out as a feline welfare volunteer, this pass is an investment in your ability to create lasting change for community cats. Visit communitycatspodcast.com/2025pass to secure your Community Cats Pass. That's communitycatspodcast.com/2025pass, because informed advocates save lives.
While I was yammering away, did you think of anything, any workaround for fundraising that you came across in any of your interviews?
Yeah. So I think it's very interesting, you know, the question of money for my organization versus money for the cause. And I've gotten very involved with a lot of social service organizations that are helping animals, and including spay-neuter assistance, but it's through social services. So it's through Meals on Wheels or Council on Aging. And they are getting out there and they are getting the work done, you know, for the families, especially with their cats. And do I care that it's not my organization? Even if I facilitated that connection? Right, exactly. I'm like, that's fine. So I do a lot of connecting of different organizations and resources. And I think the social service field, I think there's a lot of money out there for animals, for organizations that do fund social service. If you can collaborate with a Meals on Wheels or Council on Aging, and don't do it just for the money. Collaborate with them because you need to do it because it's being a good neighbor. And so then you'll have the Rolodex together. You'll have the relationship created when the opportunities, you know, become apparent. I think that there is a lot of opportunity and money out there. Back in the day, we had our coalitions. I mean, you had the Mayor's Alliance, but it was coalitions of rescue groups mainly. This is a countywide coalition of animal welfare and social services. I can see a day where a social service organization may do enough of the job so that then that animal welfare domain group may scale back significantly or age out. We have a lot of rescue groups right now that are, I'm not going to say, you know, old folks like us, right?
You've psychically read my next question. Let's talk about aging out.
So it's a concern and it's a worry because I do feel like in the 90s and the early 2000s, the rate of growth of small rescue and small TNR groups was on steroids back then. I mean, I don't know what we were drinking, but it seemed like every corner we had a new organization getting started, for better or for worse. And I believe it was for the better. I think it's great what sort of synergy we had back in the day, but maybe I am sharing my old timer thought here. And now we don't have that going on for whatever reasons that are out there. And so many of the groups are still being led by their founders that started the organization back in the mid to late 90s and early 2000s. And, you know, I think a lot of people are getting tired. And I don't think we have an official structure or system out there for succession planning or for transferring leadership. And I'm worried. I'm honestly very worried. And, you know, thinking strategically with the Community Cats podcast going forward, I think I would like to try and create something that might help us to, and I don't want to use the word recycle in a bad way because some people think of it, but to recycle these groups or reignite them in, restart them so that we don't lose all of the tribal knowledge that we have from the past.
Industrial memory, tribal knowledge. I have an interesting thing going on where we have some 16, 17-year-old volunteers that are very committed, but there's a gap between 17 and 70 that I don't know that generation. I don't know what, actually, you're kind of an anomaly because you got started young. I think I'm the typical demographic, that quote unquote empty nester who has, you know, paternal, maternal instinct, and I want to do something good for the community. And you start a TNR group in your late 40s or 50s. You were doing it much younger, but I'm ready to pass the torch. I'm going to be 70 next year. But you're right. The succession, and I don't know if it's universal, but in New York State, a nonprofit organization, when it closes, if it has any assets, they can only go to another nonprofit organization. But if people would take this succession seriously and think about the group that they want to work with to hand it off, or some new people taking over the organization. But yeah, that might be a hot workshop for the online conference.
I've been involved in both sides of the story. I mean, the Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society has had, I think, 6 organizations sort of spin out of it in form and stand on their own 2 feet. And then we've also done 2 mergers. So we have absorbed 2 organizations and they've come in. So we've done a bit of both. One of the mergers enabled us to purchase a second Catmobile because their assets came to us. And then we have had a couple of situations where we haven't specifically merged with the organization, but the organization did close and they gave us the residual to support our Catmobile program. So that is another, I mean, it's not fundraising, but it is another way of, you know, getting more resources is, if you are a good neighbor with some of your other organizations, you collaborate with them. If something does happen and they do decide to close, there is, you know, an opportunity there to help them, help with getting some potential funding to benefit your programs too.
And it should go to another CAG group and not to the state by default, because no one takes that money. Well, not that all, we're going to have a lot, we're all rolling in money to pass on, but you know, some people, actually, that's something that I wish we had a few younger people, because we are good friends at Greenpoint Cats in New York. they are brilliant at social media and for adoptions and for fundraising and for surgeries for cats and things. And, you know, they don't go anywhere with, I don't, they have a camera with them. I always have done this, you know, semi-spectacular rescue. And afterwards, oh, maybe I should have filmed that, you know, but it's what you said earlier is that's not why you're doing it. You're not rescuing the cat to make money. You're rescuing the cat because you're rescuing the cat. But it's like a certain generation, they're going to have a camera growing out of their shoulder just because it's just always there. It's not like they're saying they're not, you know, it's effortless for them to do it because they were filming already before the rescue started. But you said something that I'd like to put, and maybe you have the answer, but anyone listening, if anyone's come up with a term for a trap, neuter, return practitioner that is not rescuer, I always find it, we need a term. Rescuers are wonderful. Rescuing, they're actually taking the cat off the street or the animal and they're finding a home for it. But we don't have the luxury of being rescuers. We are caring for the cats. We're doing the best we can for them, but we can't rescue them. For a while, I was using TN Army. But if anybody out there listening has coined a term that we could all embrace that would give the rescuers their due, but also not get confused with telling ourselves, oh, we're rescuing. We'd love to be rescuing, but we're not.
Right.
Any thoughts there?
So this past fall, I had the opportunity of co-teaching a class, Community Cat Program Management course through the University of the Pacific, the certificate class, Bernard College. And so, you know, I know we want TNR in that, but there is Community Cat Program Manager, which does say something different. And it's funny as we're talking with language and stuff, you know, using the word feral cat now feels a little uncomfortable.
Yeah, feral's a behavior. It's not four paws on the ground, as you say, not necessarily.
Right. And so that's where then I try and lean more heavily using the terminology of community cat. You know, trap, neuter, return is, as you say, it's a practice. It's a protocol. But is it a position? I don't have the magical wording with the TNR. I would say
yeah.
Community cat program manager.
But I even mean the individual community cat worker.
Community cat worker, something like that.
It doesn't explain itself. Somebody hears it for the first time. They're, oh, what is that? You know,
right,
but if anybody out there has coined a term, please let us know.
Right. I mean, I guess the most basic language I would say, if I walked up to somebody and they said three words, what do I do? I mean, I would say, I would love to be able to just say, you know, I'm a cat fixer or something like that, right?
Yeah.
My job is to figure out ways to get cats fixed. And I know there's more to it.
Yeah, something to do with neutering or fixing would be great if that was in it.
Now, something like that. But I know people have opinions about using the word fix, but most of the world understands what that means.
Now, to take this full circle, you mentioned in the beginning about shaping the future. And I actually had this as the last question. Rich Avanzino, do you know him or you've ever met him?
Uh-huh.
Okay. 20 years ago, we had, I think it was hosted by the Bar Association of New York, a kind of a feral cat summit meeting in New York. And he was one of the guest speakers. I think this is even before he was with Maddie's Fund. He was still with San Francisco, I think. And he was supposed to talk about, so what does it look like when we get there? What do we want this to feel like? Where are we going? There was such an uproar of appalled, offended, angry people in the room. He said, okay, I guess we'll talk about that another time. I guess people were so outraged. It's like, we're in the trenches. This is a crisis. This is chaos. What are you talking about? I, for one, thought, yeah, we should know where we're going. We're just sort of going in the dark. We don't have a vision for this. Would you care to talk more about, because you've seen it. You've seen places where it's already there.
Right.
There's communities that, you know, it's kind of like universal healthcare. And people say, what do you mean? How could that possibly Well, it exists in several progressive countries, and they've had it for decades. But some people just can't see it ever getting a handle on it. So what do you think it does look like when we get there?
It's a great question. I think it's very important that we have a vision of what our goal is. And it's not a goal that means we're done and we can walk away and leave. And I think that's one thing that we've done in the past is we're always like, we go here, we spay neuter 500 cats and we leave and we're done. Well, that community is still living and breathing. We're organic, we're growing, we're changing, we're moving. We're very fluid. So this is fluid goal setting. So I think we need to be clear that it's not, I've got to touch the tree and I'm done. I'm there. I'm at the end of the race and I can rest now, right? It's like, see, but you have sprints and then you have jogs, then you have walks. You know, there are these different phases in the marathon of life that we work through. And at some point in that marathon in life, you're going to sit down and you're going to have to rest. And I think that we don't visualize our path in our communities that way. I think the more community-based we can be, the more successful we're going to be with our work. And understanding what our resources, our own individual, our own organizational, and our own collaborative resources in the community to understand how powerful we can be with our programs for cats and for their families. So with that comes strategic packaging to help get us there step by step. And this is how I worked in many communities in Massachusetts, which was usually a 3 to 5 year plan, where then we'd reevaluate at the end of the time. Usually by the end of the 5 years, I was at what we would call maintenance level. So it means spays and neuters are going to always have to happen. There is always a baseline, but the baseline is somewhat predictable. And if you get off that baseline, up or down, we found in COVID that baseline went down of the number of cats we were able to assist for owned cats and for the rescue community. Therefore, we had impacts that then have now upped our requirements to be able to get us back down into that steady level. You know, if you look at the stock market, a stock can go like this, but you want it to kind of, it balances out. You have this like line of support. And so, you know, we want this line of support to be horizontal. And that's when you're really at your maintenance level. Many people know about the community cat pyramid, and you also referenced cat cycling. So I want to think strategically about making sure we're being smart about our resources, where at an average, we do the same type of work in a January that we do in July. So we're trying to flatline things so that then we feel more comfortable in the space we're at. We move into the community cat calculator, which we introduced in the late summer and early fall. And that's where like the rubber meets the road, really.
I used the calculator. Is it available to everyone, or did you just give me a little sneak peek?
It is available to everyone right now.
This is really interesting. I put in 10036 Hell's Kitchen. Now we've been doing, this is really interesting to people. I hope it'll be interesting because it was a revelation for me. I put it in and it came up with over 4,000 cats that needed to be neutered. Now we've been doing TNR in Hell's Kitchen for 20 years and we're a kitten-free zone. Now we can move into getting those future cats. So if they do land on the street, they are already spayed and neutered. So the calculator, I'm going to take that right to our council member who's a little less than attentive. And this gives me a new angle for him. Okay, we don't have an on the street problem, but we want to prevent it. Look how many cats we would be needing to do if we hadn't already done the TNR. We now need to find spay neuter available on the pyramid at the bottom, because the huge number that you need to address is the privately owned animals that may or may not land on the street one day being unneutered.
Right.
So I'm very grateful to you. I'm going to take the calculator to our council member and show him, okay, we need to now zero in on privately owned animals and you need to help with spay neuter.
Right. And that's the root cause, right? So the root cause of our situation is that owned cat population. And the one interesting component of the calculator that I think many of us TNRers or practitioners is we don't realize how important that role is between the own spay neuter and the exponential value change with the trap neuter return cat numbers. So there's two key numbers that we have to goal set. That owned cat spay neuter number includes all of your clinics in your geographic zone. So whoever is able to provide services in the Hell's Kitchen is in that calculation of making sure that they get spayed and neutered on it. But it's trying to calculate some of those inflows and outflows, as well as the general population. And that's your risk zone. That's your area of risk.
Yeah.
And you need to stay on top of that. That's not ever going to go away. There's your maintenance level right there.
Yeah, that's the mindset that's so difficult to ingrain into the masses. I think who defined it for me, Miles Chadwick, he was talking at the 2018 online cat conference. And I think it was he who was talking about Mothers Against Drunk Driving, MADD. And he said they found it. They found the image, MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving. And they put the idea that it is unacceptable to drive while drinking. And they just coined it. They somehow, and if we could just somehow find that emblematic image for people about spaying and neutering their animals, not just for that animal and for their family, but for the community. And it's unacceptable that a cat find its way on the street. Also more unacceptable than not be neutered. And it's unacceptable to let them breed indiscriminately on the street without our support and helping them. Gee, anybody out there, draw that bumper sticker, send it in to Stacy at Community Cats Podcast.
Yeah.
Anything you'd like to say on any of that? I'm so grateful for this opportunity for us to hear you. You're always playing devil's advocate.
Yeah.
And as I say, I always think, I wonder how often she's biting her tongue because she has a better answer and she's better informed than the guest.
No, I just wanted to, number one, thank all of the guests from 2024. We've had an incredible year. I mean, we're at over 500 episodes and it's been over 8 years and it's an incredible journey. This really is my passion. I love running the online events too, but I really do love the podcast because it can be one of the first times I've ever met a person. And it's just so refreshing to meet new people who are out there doing incredible work, incredible caring and compassion for the cats. And I know you and I have talked about folks that have started their organization in the 90s. There are some incredible Fresno TNR, one that comes to my mind. Brandy, she's doing these neuterathons with 500 male cats, just getting 500 cats neutered because the vet capacity is worried about doing too many spays or whatever. So she's like, all right, I'll just give you all the neuters. So in a year, she does 5,000 spays and neuters, with the majority of them being neuters, but it still helps. I mean, take what you can get out there. And it's an example of being creative in your solutions to be able to maximize the amount of spay neuter that you can get out into the community. So I think as we are TNR folks, we're out there, we're on the streets, we're ambassadors. Above and beyond the trapping, we're there to support the community getting access to spay neuter services. So please, I know you all encourage folks to get their cats spayed or neutered and help provide resources. And I would just say, please stay the course, keep doing it, and be nice to each other.
Thank you, Stacy. Happy New Year, everyone.
Thank you.
That's it for this week. Please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. We love to hear what you think, and a 5-star review really helps others find the show. You can also join the conversation with listeners, cat caretakers, and me on Facebook and Instagram. And don't forget to hit follow or subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single show. Thanks for listening, and thank you for everything that you do to help create a safe and healthy world for cats.